You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
It's a one question interview today. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been.
But these are really great conversations. These are kind of when we tackle some bigger topics.
Mm-hmm.
We bring another lady into the lounge and have a conversation. So, Erin, who do we have and what are we doing?
So today we have Carrie Ill joining us. And Carrie wears a lot of different hats, but for this particular interview, she is coming as a fellow Lutheran lady. We're just talking to her as lady to lady.
Yep.
And the topic that we wanted to discuss today is it's a challenging topic, mainly because I feel like people don't talk about, like, it's one of those questions you don't talk about.
That's the whole point of this interview series.
That was the whole point of this series when we started it. Uh-huh. And the topic today is infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie, one of the reasons I thought you would be a good person to have for a conversation on this topic is because I have observed that you are an advocate for infertility awareness. Like, I have seen this. You try to bring it out into conversation. And so, yeah, let's do that here. So I don't know why you've probably given this a fair bit of thought. Why do you feel like infertility is such a hard topic to talk about? Why do people avoid it?
That's a great question. It's awkward. Nobody likes hearing about it. And I think it's awkward in the regular world, but mm-hmm. in the Lutheran world where we talk so much about the value of children, which is true,
mm-hmm.
but where we talk so much about that, hard to understand why people might not. And sometimes it's people think about the fact that, oh, maybe they just don't want kids and they don't want to bring it up and they don't want to talk about it because that would be awkward. And frankly, in churches where sometimes there are people with many, many, many children, that can also just be a very awkward conversation to have. And sometimes people don't say anything because they're worried that they'll say the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people don't say anything because they've heard people say very insensitive things before and they don't want to do that. And those are all reasons why people just don't talk about infertility a lot. I talk about it because it's something that has affected me and mm-hmm. my husband. It's a struggle that we have had. It's a grief that we have had to go through, and it really is grief. A lot of people stay away from all sorts of kinds of grief, too, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. And it's a kind of grief, and it's something that's a result of sin in the world. People often just don't like to talk about that. So it can be a really difficult topic to talk about. And there are some things that can be very insensitive, and not always, people aren't always trying to be insensitive about it, but they can be very insensitive. But sometimes having a good person to talk about can also help people feel a little relief in that grief that they are going through as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about infertility that is so uniquely painful? Because on the surface, I mean, it's usually tied to some sort of medical problem, but often not a medical problem that is going to shorten your life or fill your days with suffering, that you could still live a long, happy, healthy life, even with the medical problems that cause infertility. And yet, the people that I know who have struggled with it have struggled. It is a painful thing. Why is that?
God said to be fruitful and multiply. And frankly, part of it feels sometimes like part of your value as a woman is to do that, is to be fruitful and multiply. And there's all sorts of expectations. I mean, let's be honest. How many girls when they're little spend a lot of time playing with their baby dolls and pretending to be mom, and then to grow up and all of a sudden not have that play that you do all of those years through is supposed to be good practice for you. And there's a reason. There's a reason that we do it. There's a reason that little girls want to play with baby dolls for the most part, because that is something innate in us, given to us by God, this desire to have children. And when it doesn't happen, there's grief, there's loss. My whole life, even when I was a younger kid, I wanted children. My college roommate would laugh at me, not in not in joking terms. But yeah, she was laughing because close to campus, there was a miniature dollhouse store, and we loved going there to see all the miniature dollhouse stuff. I know it seems a really weird thing for two college girls to do.
Not at all.
But I was the one who was a little more obsessed with it. And when she got married and had kids first, she was, and I love her dearly. She's a great friend. She was like, I always thought you'd have kids before me because you were the one who wanted them so badly, even back in college, even before I was dating my husband. Mm-hmm. So it really is, there's a grief of what you don't have. And it's a grief of what God has chosen not to provide. And it's a result of sin in the world. And sin is painful and sin is hard.
Mm-hmm. Though we should probably clarify, it's not necessarily the result of one particular sin in your life. It's not that God is punishing you for something that you did. Yeah. It's simply the whole world is tainted by sin, and you are caught up in the mess of it all.
Correct, right.
And unless anyone out there is feeling burdened in their conscience.
Right, no. Adam and Eve, darn you.
Yeah.
Because I also am in this camp, how do you manage that when your life ends up not meeting the expectations that we have for ourselves when we're kids, playing with baby dolls, and then you grow up and then you don't have what you expected? How do you manage that? I really want to know personally, too, because I could use some help in this area.
Well, like everything, like grief in general. It's a grief. It's a stages. It takes a long time. From my personal experience, I don't know if I will ever completely get over this idea. So the general stages of grief, like people talk about, that's definitely something that you go through. It does get easier over time. This is a struggle my husband and I have been going through for 15-ish years since we really first started the, okay, we really are ready to have children now. And so it does get easier over time. It doesn't ever get easy, but it does get easier over time. So sometimes time is just a helpful thing. There's also a lot of Bible verses that I go to. I like praying the Psalms when I'm grieving. I know a lot of people like praying the Psalms when they are grieving.
Yep.
And there are some really angry Psalms, but there's also just some really comforting Psalms. Actually, since we started talking about doing this, everything that's showing up in church lately feels like it is hitting with it.
Yeah.
So the other week was Psalm 146, and that really hit with me, especially like those verses 3 to 5, which Psalm 146, by the way, is my funeral psalm that I have picked out for my funeral.
Okay.
And it hit me with this too, and I think it fits the put not your trust in princes and a son of man in whom there is no salvation. When his breath departs, he returns to the earth. On that very day, his plans perish. Blessed is he whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God. And that just hit me again. It's hit me before, but it hit me again of my hope is in the God of Jacob. My hope is in the Lord. Put not your trust in princes. Yeah, we talk about that a lot with, you know, elected leaders, but that's anything on this earth, people on this earth. I'm not going to put my trust in the things of this earth, the things that are here, but in the God of Jacob. And very similarly, actually, Psalm 146 and Psalm 46 are very similar.
Isn't it
Psalms?
Funny?
It is. Yeah. It's really funny. You know, the God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble and its swelling. Right? The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob, again, is our fortress. Mm-hmm. Like, through all the challenging things that happen in life and in the world. So I go to the Psalms. Mm-hmm. The Psalms really help me with that as well. And I am also a fellow hymn nerd. I love, love hymnody.
Yes.
And I have. And there's so many hymns I sing, some of which I wouldn't even call my favorite, but they're the ones that I sing maybe to myself the most often. Christ Be My Leader is the hymn I sing to myself the most often. Mm. It's so good and just so comforting in any of those times. We actually sang My Hope is Built on Nothing Less on Sunday in church. This was one of our wedding hymns.
Oh.
But so we're getting funeral, wedding, all this stuff, and it really fits.
Yeah.
But on Christ, the solid rock I stand, right? Nothing else matters. It's Christ. And that can be really comforting. Also, another hymn I know a lot of people love that we just sang 2 weeks ago in church, Lord, Thee I Love with All My Heart.
So good.
Especially that second verse just really, really gets into Christ is here. Christ is with us. It's not about me. It's not about the world. It's about him. So,
yeah, that hymn, I just, fun fact, we sang it in church recently too. And as soon as it starts going, I know to start fishing around in my purse for the pocket pack of Kleenex. Because like my husband always cries at this hymn, but because he cries, all the kids are like emotionally fragile too. So we got two pews of giant Bomberger children. And like, you just hear this like, but it is, it's a uniquely powerful hymn to just sort of like express all that, all the futility of life and the hope of the resurrection that we have in Christ. And it just gets me every time.
It's appropriate in every situation.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I wouldn't even say it's one of my favorite hymns, but
yeah,
sometimes it happens and it hits.
Yeah. I,
things are set up in church the way they are. Because a lot of times the liturgy, the text, the hymns for that week all seem to hit what I need at that time.
Yeah. It's almost like the Lord is in charge of the whole thing.
Amazing.
Well, I don't know. For those who haven't struggled personally with this particular issue, can you just tell us a little bit about what your journey has been and include along the way? Where have you found joy along the way? You know, you talked about how, you know, you keep being surprised by the Psalms and how, you know, God cares for you in those moments. What has that process been for you as you've struggled with this over 15 years, you said? What has that journey been?
Yeah, so you're not usually diagnosed with some kind of infertility, or maybe not a diagnosis, but until you've been actively trying to have a child for a year. So my husband's a pastor, I'll say that. And after seminary, we started really actively trying to have children. And after about a year, a little bit less than a year, I went to my doctor and said, this seems to be a problem. She said, I realize that, but it's too early yet for us to really do anything. So, you know, come back at your next appointment, we'll talk about it. And so then at my next appointment, I went in and she said, okay, let's look at some things. And we did a little bit of testing and I got diagnosed with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is very common for many people who struggle with infertility. And it's one of those things, actually, what makes that hard is that it doesn't make it impossible to have children. Some people still have children with PCOS. So it's not like a condition where you're like, nope, you're never going to have children and just move on.
Yeah.
So it's always still every time. That time of the month comes around.
Worse.
Yeah, there's that glimmer of hope instead of
the agony.
Yeah. Like, it's almost easier if the door is shut completely.
Right.
Not
right.
that anything is easy, but like, if you know you have to move on, then you move on. But when there's that glimmer of like, oh, maybe.
And another thing that's characteristic of people with PCOS is that their cycles are very irregular. So I've gone as long as 80 days in between cycles. And when you start going that long, you take a lot of pregnancy tests.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So I have taken a lot of pregnancy tests in my lifetime. And to have everyone come up negative is, of course, always hard.
Devastating.
So, yeah, it's devastating every time. And that is something from talking to some other people too. A lot of, especially people with PCOS, but a lot of other things go through every pregnancy test is that little bit of grief again. And it hits again. So it's been that long journey. There are some things to still be hopeful for. Sometimes they say that people with PCOS have a longer fertility window than others because your cycles are farther apart. So it's a possibility, but still, at this point, I'll be honest, at this point in my life, I'm 42. And so that window is quickly closing. And to some extent, I've come to terms with that. I'm not saying there's not grief, but time has passed and I've come to terms with that. God has given me a lot of vocations. And at least at the moment, right now, one of them is not to be a mother. Now, are there advantages to not having children? of course there are. Anybody with kids looks at you and they say, well, look, you can go out to the theater. You can go out to do this and you don't have to find a babysitter.
I was going to say that because that is one thing I've noted, not knowing this side of your story. There have been times when I've looked at your Facebook feed because we've been friends for a long time and, oh, Carrie and Peter are out at the theater again, or they're having a nice restaurant, or they're on vacation someplace cool. And oh, well, someday that'll be me, you know, but it's so easy to only see the shiny part and not the shadow behind it. So, there are blessings, but I still don't wish this for you.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There are things I enjoy about it. But would I give all of that up to have children? Yes. Yes, I would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But with that said, since God has not given me that vocation at the moment, there are other things I can do with my life.
Yeah.
Go to the theater for me, please.
Go to the theater. Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
And I do have places with children in my life. I'm a teacher, so I have 17 lovely students that I get to see every single day. And through my teaching career, I haven't counted up how many it is, but it's probably around 500 students that I've had over my teaching career already. So God has blessed me in other ways and has given me opportunities to work with children and interact with children. I don't teach Sunday school because I teach all week. And the last thing I want to do is teach again on Sunday morning. But during the summer, like I'll teach at VBS or we do some summer Sunday school things that I'll do. So I work with kids and my church that way. Yeah. So there's other places that God has put children into my life. And I think that's a good thing. Just because God hasn't given you the vocation to be a mother doesn't mean that you can't act in kind of a mothering role in other places in your life. And I think that's really helpful to remember too.
Yeah. I think it's in the prayer on Mother's Day that makes me like weep every year. I'm going to cry on air right now too. It's that the women who don't have children find solace in the children of the church. Mm. And that gets me every time. I was trying not to cry on this episode. But I mean, that's, and Katie Schuerman's book too, He Remembers the Barren, about how, like you're saying, you have vocations. And when you don't have the vocation of mother, you're able to have other vocations and you're able to serve in a variety of other ways. And I have found that too with like my goddaughters and being able to spend additional time with people in a way that I know others can't. So understanding that and being intentional with that time, it's hard, but it is also a blessing to be able to do stuff that other people can't.
And I know from experience that the kids out there who that you all are pouring into, I mean, my kid's been blessed by women who took solace in the children of the church and their lives are richer for it. So it's the kids are grateful wherever they are to be loved by you. I know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Just breathing for a moment. Speaking of the solace of the church, how has being in the church nestled in amongst your brothers and sisters in Christ made things different for you as you went through this journey? I say different because I realize that as much it can make things way easier, but sometimes we make things harder. What is it like to walk this path in the fellowship of the church?
Right. So, I mean, having fellowship with other people is always a blessing and always is a good thing. God didn't make us to be alone. And so church together is a blessing. And there are definitely some people in my current congregation, as well as congregation I had in the past, that could tell if things were a little rough. Mother's Day at church is very hard.
It's so hard.
Mother's Day at church is very hard. And there's been a couple of years where I've looked at myself and said, I don't know if I should go to church today.
Same. And right there with you.
And I'm at church every time it's offered. So I don't miss church. I don't miss the midweek Lenten and Advent services or special services. Like, I'm there. And Mother's Day, there's been a couple of times where I've been like, I don't know if I want to go now. But especially when this is not my current congregation, but when people do things like, let's pass out roses to every single mother in the congregation. And I get why people are doing it. Everybody is doing it out of a sense of joy and let's celebrate motherhood and let's celebrate this gift that God has given. None of it ever comes from a place of insincerity or trying to be mean, to be honest. Yeah. But it's hard when you're that one person, especially when you're of that age that walks by, especially when people say, oh, well, I know you're not a mom, but you have all these students or you have all these things. I'm like, and those are things are true. It's not always helpful when somebody else points it out, especially on Mother's Day where you're already feeling some things. We do have a wonderful member of our church, though, who, well, I mean, we have more than one person, but we definitely have a wonderful member in our church who sees me on Mother's Day and who knows and understands and checks in with me and makes sure I'm doing okay. And so that is something. If you know somebody in your congregation is struggling with infertility, Mother's Day or Father's Day, because men struggle with this too. It's not easy for them either.
Yeah.
Check in with them, especially if you have a relationship with them already. Check in and just see how they're doing. You might not need to say a whole lot, but just, hey, how are you? Mm-hmm. But I go to church on Mother's Day anyway, because I know that's where God's gifts are. And I know He will always have something there for me that I shouldn't miss. So I go. So other things that people have helped with, just listening, especially if I want to talk about it, somebody who's just there to be a listening ear and who lets me know that, hey, the person who checks in, hey, are you okay? What's going on? And just being willing to listen and not necessarily even say anything, just listen to the struggles I'm going through. And if she feels like there's a place to jump in and give me some encouragement from scripture or from something else, she'll do it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, sometimes you just need somebody to listen to you. And that's something that ideally the church should be good at, right? We should be good at listening to other people. I say ideally because not everybody is.
I'm sorry to laugh here. We're people. We struggle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some things that are not always easy in church, besides Mother's Day, are people who try to give a lot of advice. Things like, oh, maybe you just need to relax. I've heard that so many times from so many people, both in the church and outside of the church. And trust me, if relaxing solved the problem, it's a medical issue and relaxing isn't just going to solve it.
No.
Or people who then like start complaining about their kids or offer to give you their kids. Like they're like, oh, my kid was so bad. I'm just good. You know what? You don't have kids. You can take them. And part of me wants to say, okay. And I know they don't actually want to give their kids away. But sometimes there's a, sure, I'll take your kid. So those things can be struggles too.
Mm-hmm.
Also, infertility is usually a medical issue. And so I have had medical talks with my doctor about this, but there's a lot of people who want to give you medical advice who don't actually know what's going on. Or they're like, oh, I heard my friend tried this and all of a sudden they got pregnant. Well, if they tried one thing and all of a sudden got pregnant, they probably weren't really struggling with infertility. Or maybe, you know, there's lots of different kinds of infertility too. So I don't want to speak for everybody, but those things can be hard. So sometimes if you don't have anything kind to say, sometimes it's better just not to talk at all. It's fine to check in and say, how are you feeling and how are you doing? And let that person talk to you. But just inserting your own advice and opinions isn't always helpful. And sometimes you will. Sometimes I have those friends who I can just sit down over a cup of coffee with somewhere and we can just talk. And that's great. But that's not everybody. It's not a comfortable conversation to have. And it's not a comfortable conversation for me necessarily to always have either. So,
Yeah.
Speaking of uncomfortable questions, let's deal with some of the elephants in the room, because I think somebody was telling that this might have been asked recently. So what do you do when people try to offer those pat solutions to your problem? I'm thinking questions, and I've actually heard these asked in conversations that I've been part of. Have you considered IVF? Have you considered adoption or fostering? You know, like, let me try to fix this with you by offering this obvious, seemingly obvious solution. How do you answer questions like that graciously? As if, I mean, because the temptation would be to say, duh, I've been on this journey for a while. We've thought about everything here. There's nothing we've not considered. But how do you turn around and answer those kinds of helpful questions?
Usually I just say, it depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to somebody I don't know as well, I usually say things like, thank you for your thoughts. And try to steer the conversation onto another direction. And as politely as I can, I try not to say it sarcastically. I try not to be sarcastic, but that's, thank you for your thoughts or thank you for your ideas. And sometimes that's enough. If it's somebody I know better, if it's somebody I know really well, I might actually go into why we haven't done these things.
Mm.
For us, IVF is not an option because biblically we have real concerns about IVF.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For us, we've definitely talked about adoption, but there's lots of different reasons that people don't adopt or can't adopt. It might not be that somebody hasn't tried adoption even.
That's true.
And just hasn't been successful in it. And so, like I said, there's lots of reasons for that. So sometimes I'll just have that conversation with them. If it's somebody kind of in the middle, somebody that I know pretty well, but not well enough to have that conversation with, usually I'll say something along the lines of, once again, thank you very much for your thoughts. That's not something we're interested in right now, or it's something we've tried and we're not interested in doing again. And we'll just kind of stop it there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it definitely takes a lot of, usually I have to pause for a moment and collect myself. So I am a super sarcastic person by nature, and I really have to work to not let that come out of me all the time. So I usually have to pause for a moment and just stop and think about it first. But
this is why we're friends with you guys.
Full disclosure, we go to the theater with the Ills. So Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I think it took me a while to get to that mindset of like, children are not a commodity. Like it's not something, especially with adoption, like it's not something that it's like, I want to have a child in my life and I deserve it. And I am owed this child. And so right. I'm going to go adopt a child and then I will have one. But like, that's not how it works. Children are gifts and God is the giver of those gifts. And regardless of how that happens, God is still in control of how and when that happens. And even with adoption, it's not a sure thing that that's even going to happen. And there's just a lot. There's so much in adoption and fostering. It's like, it's not the easier road. Like there's so much more that goes into it. So those are interesting questions to answer depending on who's asking. For sure.
And it's true. It really depends a lot on who's asking the question.
Yeah.
Right.
Different people have different levels of trust in.
Yeah. Well, and different people have different levels of investment in you as well, because some people, they're just asking the question to make conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Others are genuinely invested in you and think that they're offering something genuinely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in those cases, you would respond differently. You mentioned that you have biblical reasons for not pursuing IVF, and I know that this is a controversial topic in our country right now.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not too much, could you share that in a little bit more detail and also tell us, are there other ways that your Lutheran theology shapes your approach to dealing with infertility?
Ooh, that's a big one. Even within our synod, there are some different opinions about IVF, and so I can only speak to what is personal for me at this point and what I'm seeing. And I'm not saying that I don't want to ever say that anybody who has ever done anything with IVF is wrong, because there are some ways, some parts of IVF that I don't know. I'll be honest and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have some friends who used IVF with, you know, a single embryo and did it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't begrudge them their children or anything that they have from that either. For me, the real issue with IVF is that it creates life. It creates life. And with many forms of IVF, it creates life with the intention that some will die and be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's more life to create than will be used to say it that way. So my biggest concern is that God is the giver of life. Mm-hmm. God has given us life, and it's not me. As much as I might want it to be me, it's not me. And I think we have to talk really carefully about life. It's a life issue. It really is. And so we have to be really careful about how we handle life in that way, and especially like trying to create life and trying to play God and doing those things can be a real stumbling block for people. And it can be something that, yeah, like I said, we have to be really careful about it.
Yeah. And I suppose it probably comes back around to what Sarah mentioned, the commodification of children, that we need to be careful that I explained the ninth and tenth commandments, you know, coveting to my children as wanting something that God has not seen fit to give you.
Yep.
And that I suppose it's important to be careful not to feel so entitled to something that God has not given you that you're willing to compromise your conscience to bring that about. And I definitely respect your point of view on that. And I agree that it's something that people need to think long and hard about. Sorry, that got really deep. No, let's talk more about Lutheran theology, shall we? How does being Lutheran both provide you a framework for dealing with this and great comfort?
Well, like I mentioned before, vocation. Mm. Vocation is one of those things that as Lutherans, we talk about differently than really anybody else does, I think.
So true. Yeah. So true. And other people are jealous of our way of talking about vocation. Like I read like evangelical Protestants all the time referencing like Jean Vieth's books, you know, on vocation as being like, oh my goodness, this is such good stuff. And I'm like, well, for over here, it's pretty typical.
You too could be Lutheran.
But a lot of times just looking at things through that lens of vocation. What are the vocations God has given me? He's given me the vocation of wife. He's given me the vocation of teacher. He's given me the vocation of church member, of choir member, of member of all these different groups that I belong to. So he's given me all these different vocations. And these are all gifts from God. He has not right now given me the vocation of being a mother. And that would also be a gift from God too. And it's not one that I have. And I don't want to say it's okay because it's still painful, but it is. But at the same time, it is okay because I'm not God. And he has laid my path for me. And I have to trust in him and follow in where he guides me. And right now, it's just not part of what he's given me. And it's hard, but I have to say, God, this is where you have me right now. And it's hard to be okay with it. It's not easy. It's not easy to always be okay with any of the vocations God has given us. As a teacher, there are times where I look at my classroom and I say, God, why did you give me this vocation of caring for these students?
I couldn't do what you do. And I so respect that God has given you that gift, even if it's not easy. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I think we all go through that, all through times where we struggle with the vocations God has given us and the vocations God hasn't given us. Mm-hmm. There are lots of vocations we could have that maybe God just hasn't given to us at the moment. I mean, I know I have some friends who have kids who their parents are very athletic, and they grieved a little bit that their kids have no athletic talent because they wanted to be the sport. They wanted to be the sports parent. They wanted to be doing all of those things. And that's sports parent is soccer mom is not the vocation that they have been given.
That is so funny because that's my life. I just was having a conversation yesterday with my daughter and was saying, so what about that homeschool cross country team? And she's like, no. Yeah. I spent all my careers running and my kids don't like it at all.
Oh, no.
But yeah, that's the vocation of sports mom is not mine. I get to be speech mom instead. But there are delights in it that I never would have expected. Yeah, it's your vocations choose you. More often than not, there's this idea out there that you choose your vocation. Not usually.
Yeah. No,
not really.
So I'm sort of thinking more on what Rachel was saying with like ninth and 10th commandments. happens.
Oh, let's talk coveting.
I know. Coveting.
Because boy, it's
so
hard.
Like, how do you, what has been your approach? And I know that you don't, there's no pat answer or anything, but like, what's been your approach? Because there are good gifts. So it's not wrong to want the good gifts, but God doesn't give them. When does it become coveting? And how do you navigate that? How do you thread the needle between wanting the good gift and not coveting it?
That's a
do
great,
you have an answer?
That's a great question, because I realized as soon as I said that I made it sound like every time you want something, it's wrong. No.
I know you didn't mean that either. So
but yeah, where do you cross over into the really unhelpful
just like
territory?
A constant thing of like trying to walk the line between wanting the good gift and not coveting it.
That's a great question. I really wish I had a great answer for you.
Because I wish you. Erin just wanted to know for herself.
I don't know. I do know that it's something that I confess in my, when I confess a lot of times, I confess about the 9th and 10th commandments. Something I don't do often enough is actually read through all the commandments and just use all of those. And I know I should more often than I do. But every once in a while it comes across, maybe because we were talking about it with my kids in school. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I should really go back and start doing that.
Yeah.
Especially first graders are really interesting, because when they have to all of a sudden start thinking about sins that they've done, they can't think of anything that they've ever done wrong.
Yeah.
And so I go through the Ten Commandments a lot and we talk about it. And every time I do one of those, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me. I need to do this for me, too.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So I pray and I confess my sins a lot. And I remember my baptism and remember that no matter what, I am a baptized child of God. Another one of the hymns I love to sing myself is God's Own Child.
Yes.
Because that one just helps, especially when I'm struggling with some of those feelings of, okay, I'm baptized. I'm Christ. Mm-hmm. He's got me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it verges into coveting when I start questioning, when I'm like, why didn't you give this to me, God? Like, it's a good thing. And I love these children in my life. So why isn't it mine? Because obviously it should be mine too. I think that's at least a marker that I've gone from appreciating a gift to then wanting something that is not mine. And that probably happens every time because, you know, sin. But that our Lutheran framework is so helpful for that. It took me, and this is, you know, when we talk about good gifts and we grow up in a church that's like, children are a good gift. And so for a long time, I was like, that was the thing that was going to make me happy. And the day I remember the day I realized that that's what I was doing. I was like, I will be happy when I have children. And I realized that that was the thing that I was holding above all other things. And I was like, boy, that's a thing I got to confess, because it's not mine. It hasn't been given to me. But that confession and absolution, that repentance is so, it's healing because you can just let it go. You know, it's going to come. It's going to happen again.
Yeah.
But like, you can let it go. You can experience it. You can grieve it. You confess it. You know, you're forgiven. And then you move on. And that's,
you're right. You're quite right that our Lutheran framework for confession and absolution would make a huge difference when you're beset by these sorts of, you know, this kind of sin that you can't seem to completely ever shake.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, some churches would say, oh, well, you can't shake that sin. Guess you weren't really a Christian to begin with.
Try harder.
Others would say, well, if you can't shake that sin, then obviously it's not that big a deal. Like, God loves you anyway. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, embrace it. But to be able to say, yes, that's really a sin, confess, but know that Christ's blood applies here now, you know, that it's an inexhaustible resource. Yeah. The forgiveness of God.
Thank the Lord.
The confession and absolution that we have in the church service on its own is really helpful. And I especially, fortunately, I'm married to to a pastor. So he leaves enough time where they always say silence for individual, you know, confession. Some pastors rush over that. They give like a half second and they move on.
Uh-huh.
And You need a little bit of uncomfortable silence because
does
you need
he, like,
time
just
to
just let it linger until everyone's starting to squirm?
Not quite that
that's
long.
That's awesome.
But maybe not quite that long, but he does give it a little bit of time. Like, I have time to actually confess some of my, to confess uh-huh. my sins, because I've been to churches uh-huh. where they leave that second and you're like, by the time I start confessing my sins, they've moved on.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't yeah. get me wrong, the absolution yeah. is amazing.
Right.
But I wanted a chance to confess my sins. So
right.
that's
right.
a great time. And I highly encourage, if you are one of those people who are sitting in that silence, really uncomfortable, it's good. It's good for that uncomfort, because this is a yeah. great time for you just to confess your sins before God. Mm-hmm. And knowing that you are going, the next thing coming is absolution, where you receive right. that forgiveness. Yeah.
And if you can't think of any, use that time to pray so that God will show you what you need to yes. leave at the foot of the cross today.
Yes.
Seems like, yeah, whenever there's time to just sit and ponder, even if I start out thinking, well, I guess I don't have anything particular this week. And then eventually, oh, no, there was that. Oh, uh-huh. and that one too.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm one of those people that when I'm a little stuck, I pray for my pride, because if I can't come up with anything, it's a pride
it's
issue.
Pride.
Mm. It's pride.
Well said.
And for me, I know I always yeah. need to confess my pride.
Yes.
So, yep.
It's
uh-huh. where I start. Goes from there.
Well, I have a question that I tacked on to the bottom of our list of questions, because, and I realize we've sort of talked about this throughout the interview, good and bad things to say when you find out a friend is struggling with this. My struggle has been was throughout my childbearing years, which are over now, was the opposite. I joke that my oldest daughter was born 2 years premature, because that was not, yeah, infertility, not something we struggled with. What I did struggle with was how to tell my best friend at the time, who was struggling with infertility, mm-hmm. that we had an unplanned pregnancy happening. And I guess selfishly, I want to ask you, you know, I recognize that given the difference in our circumstances, it's easy for me to feel awkward or even like guilty that our stories are different. How can we love each other even given the difference in our stories?
Well, first of all, infertility is a result of sin. Not my sin, not that person's sin, but it's a result of sin in the world. And so no one should feel guilty, because God has given them great blessings. And I say this for everything, for children, for whatever blessings God has given you. Don't feel guilty about those blessings that God has provided to you. When it comes to announcing pregnancies, some things that people have done for me is they've talked to me personally before they tell other people, yeah. so that I don't just find out about it on Facebook necessarily, or yeah. they don't tell me in a big group of people. If they're going to announce it to yeah. like people in person, they've told me personally first about it. And I've had some people really think about it. My husband and I have 4 wonderful godchildren, 2 of whom we don't get to see very often because they're pastor's kids and they live far away. But we've definitely had some of that conversation happening of, we'd like to ask you to be godparents, but we're nervous about asking you for this situation. And people just approached it very kindly, very gently of, hey, we have some news. We'd like to talk to you about it. But if you're not comfortable being godparents, right. because this is painful for you, we're okay with that. And so just understanding that for some people, maybe that's not something they're ready to take on and to do. And so that's been a blessing for me as well. But yeah, just sometimes those conversations one-on-one are more helpful than just surprising people in a group. Because even if I'm there when you announce it to everybody else, I've had time to prepare myself for it a little bit. Because I am joyful for all of my friends, for all of the children they've had, and I am ecstatic for them. But sometimes it takes a minute for my face to show that, even if I really am that way, because there's grief. There's also grief that goes on.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll be honest. I have a very expressive face, and so I have to.
Yep. We love that about you.
Oh, right there with you.
I will second that. It has been so kind of my friends to tell me first before announcing it to people. So I second that motion wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just, that's helpful, because I've carried that burden of awkwardness And I'll continue. I mean, I'm sure it goes both ways, but I do share the pain. Spoiler alert, kids won't actually make you happy. Unless there was any doubt about that. Don't expect them to be something to you that only God can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't make you happy, but they do make your life richer. And I am beyond grateful for each of my children. And I feel in my gut the pain and the grief that I know anyone who desires children and can't have them must feel. And I just want to be love to that situation, but don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something that I have told my friends too, that don't let my personal struggles get in the way of their joy, because I am, like Carrie said, I am thrilled for every one of my friends who is pregnant. And right now, at time of recording, I think there are 6 or 7 in my church.
Wow. Praise the Lord.
Like, we had a bit of a lull, but we're about to have like a baptism a month for the next 6 months. This tends to happen at my church. We have a ton and then we have none and we're back to having a lot. And it's just an odd thing, because on one side of it, I am thrilled. Like, there's more babies and I love the babies in church. There's so many of them and it makes me so happy. But like, on the flip side of that is the grief. And like, you just can't separate them. They're always going to be together, for now anyway, unless the Lord decides differently. So like, yes, there is going to be grief when we have that conversation, but there's also joy. And like, I don't want to rain on their parade, just like they don't want to rain on mine. But like, just that understanding and bringing, being respectful of that. But nobody's mad about more babies.
No.
Yeah.
We want more babies. They are also gifts from God.
Yes, please. I might go cry in the corner after you tell me, but that doesn't mean I'm sad for you. It's just grief.
Yeah.
Okay, so how have you found ways to love other women who are also going through similar things?
So I actually don't have a whole lot of friends that have struggled with infertility. I know I have a few, but I don't have a lot. So I haven't had lots of those conversations with a lot of other people that I know very personally. There's a few things I do. So Infertility Awareness Week is in April every year. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I mostly post my stuff on Facebook and other places of the, hey, this is just some things just for you. I haven't been super, super, super open with everybody about it. I mean, a lot of people know, but I haven't said lots and lots of things to people always about it, just because I'm kind of the, if you ask me questions about it, usually I'll answer, but I'm an introvert. I'm not always just going to randomly go up to people and say, hey, let me tell you about my struggles with infertility. But I do. So there's a week in April. There is a group. There's a couple of different groups that I've belonged to, including one specifically for women with PCOS that I've belonged to that has people connect. And those are online and those are people I don't know. And it's not all Christians. It's just kind of a random group. So sometimes people say things on there and I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to ignore this one right now because I don't need that conversation or that part.
Right.
I wish there was more stuff for Lutheran leaders to deal with this, and I don't know where it all exists. There might be something I just don't know about. I'll be honest with you. But yeah, so a lot of the conversations I've had are via online stuff with people I don't know very well, which sometimes actually is helpful, because if you don't know them very well, you feel like you can just kind of say things. It's the downfall of the internet, and it's also the joy of the internet.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I've done a lot with that. Yeah.
Some conversations are just easier to have anonymously.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know the recovery community knows that very well.
No.
Yeah. Do you find that by, you know, even by just posting occasionally in April or elsewise, does that invite people to open up to you about stuff, or is it just sort of like crickets?
No, I do have a few people who will at least appreciate what I've posted or comment to me and say, hey, I'm really glad you're putting this up out there, putting this up, because it helps people know, or people who are not willing to be as open with their own infertility struggles have said that to me. But most of the feedback I just get is, thank you for sharing that. And I've had some friends who'd be like, okay, I know this is Infertility Awareness Week because you've been posting. So this is a week where you might just need a little extra love or a little extra care. because mm-hmm. I know it's at the front of your mind right now. So,
right.
Yeah. Are there resources that you have found that you think are really helpful resources, either for somebody who is struggling with it themselves with infertility, or for those who are like the next wave out, like the parents of those who are like thinking about the fact that the grandchildren that they wished that they would be able to, you know, enjoy, or, you know, just the further out, the friends of those who struggle with it, for, you know, are there resources that you're like, this one you feel like is actually a really good one, or is this actually just something that is there's a gap in it? There's a reason we don't talk about it. And part of the not talking about it means there aren't resources. Cause if there were talking about it, there'd be resources.
So there's a great organization out there called Resolve. Their website is resolve.org, and they are not a Christian organization. So you will see things on their website about IVF and some other things that, once again, I'm not always comfortable with, but they mm-hmm. do have some really great resources, including tips of things to say to people who are struggling with infertility, things to not mm-hmm. say to people who are struggling with infertility, resources for family members. They actually do have some of that on there. So Resolve is a great resource for that. And then Katie Sherman's He Remembers the Baron was already mentioned, mm-hmm. which I'll be honest, I had not read until a couple of weeks ago when I was preparing for this. I had never read it. And I did. I got it out of my library and read it.
Intentionally? Like, you were like, I don't know. I'm sorry. That's anyway, yeah. I've already asked it. So there, it's out there. Did you avoid it intentionally? Or did you just, hadn't gotten to it?
There was a little bit of avoiding it intentionally, I uh-huh. think, just because it's hard to read those kinds of things. And yeah. earlier on in my infertility journey, I would not have been ready to read, uh-huh. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But I was like, oh, yeah, I'm talking about this. I should probably actually read this Lutheran book that's about it. Okay. And I did. And it had some really yeah. good things in it, too. Yeah. So I will yeah. recommend it to people uh-huh. For that purpose. So, and I actually think it might be, for me personally, I think it might have been more helpful for me to recommend it to, like, my mom and my dad mm. than for me. And I will still recommend uh-huh. it to my mom, especially when she eventually gets home from her travels around the world.
So, yeah, Aaron's comment and your follow-up comment here brings up another question. You had mentioned earlier that husbands as well as wives mm. feel the grief of this, but mm-hmm. what about the parents? You know, I'm looking forward now. My children are growing up, like, so fast. I'm much closer to grandchildren than to children right now. But how would I feel if one of my kids or all of my kids were unable to have grandchildren? How does this involve the entire family and your marriage, your relationship with your parents? Like, how do you navigate?
Yeah, I think there, and I don't want to speak for my parents specifically, but I think there has been a little bit of grief from them too. Mm-hmm. I will say they've handled it very well. My husband's parents have handled it very well, but there's definitely, I think, been a little bit of grief and a little bit of, wait, what's going to happen? And especially in our family, they have, even though I have a brother and Peter has a sister, there are no grandchildren on either side of the family from any of us. So my brother just got married when he was 38 years old. So who knows that there's yeah. still going to yeah. be possibility yeah. there, but I think there is just a little bit of grief that goes along with that. I think what makes it easier for them is one of my cousins is now a father and none of my other cousins have kids either. Okay. We just have a whole okay. family without a whole lot. Yeah. And some of it's just because people haven't gotten married
mm-hmm.
and all of those kinds of things. So it's not like a whole family struggle with infertility. But yeah, so I think sometimes in some ways that's made it a little easier because they're not seeing their brothers and sisters with all of these grandkids either. But yeah, I think there's been a little bit of grief for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't, my parents are not super demonstrative with their feelings, so it's not something they've talked about a lot to me, but you know your parents, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they love me and I can yeah. still tell that they love yeah. me and they appreciate all the gifts God has given to them as well. So,
yeah. It's a grief for anyone who is longing for that. including, and I really want to be a grandma someday. And how would I feel if, of course, I would want to love and care for my kids through that grief process. Yeah. But I would have my own grief to carry as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you and the good Reverend Ill keep your marriage strong despite your disappointment? Because you have a very good marriage. I really enjoy watching you two.
We spend a lot of time together. And that's, well, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes it feels like we spend no time together because he's a pastor and I'm a teacher and we are just ships in the wind.
Yeah.
But we are very intentional about spending time together. We do go to the theater a lot. Some of that is we have season tickets to things because that guarantees you date nights and things that you can't put off. You have to go.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Actually, we started doing that pretty early in our marriage of like, this is the guaranteed things that we have. So yeah, we spend time together. And for us, that's been really important. Just, being with each other and just having those conversations when we need to have them. And sometimes just being together, even if we're watching a show and not talking the entire time, sometimes just sitting next to each other and being in the same place is really helpful to build that relationship.
Yeah. Well, good job. You're doing it.
And I will say, there were times in our marriage where we definitely struggled with this and where things were not easy and where our relationship was not as strong, maybe, as either of us would have liked it to be. But with God's grace, we've made it through those times. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not just true of us. That's true of a lot of people in a lot of marriages, that there's just a time frame where things are harder. And but God is good.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I can see how infertility would present a significant challenge to your marriage and something that you would have to overcome.
Yeah.
From your perspective, I'm like taking a bit of a left turn. I'm just thinking what we talked about earlier, how being in the church is helpful and sometimes not helpful. From your perspective, what are some ways that churches can make women who don't have kids feel included? There's a lot of activities that are family-centric. Sometimes I feel a little left out of stuff because it just doesn't feel like it's for me.
So that's a hard one because you want to, a lot of things you would do, you include either kind of everybody or you include, it's more family-centric. And I have the privilege right now of being at a smaller congregation. We're not super big. So a lot of times when we include everybody, it's kind of, okay, it's fine because we've got the older people, we've got the people more my age, we've got the people with all the kids, and everybody can do things together, and that's okay. And right now we don't have a lot of things during the day because we don't have any women who want to do things in the middle of the day.
That's fair.
Our women's group died out, unfortunately, because we just don't. Uh-huh. We don't have any women who can meet in the middle of the day, and they didn't want to meet later in the evening.
That's fair.
So, so those things are like just having things where people can all be included, though, and where it's not, oh, here's a bunch of kids and here's a bunch of this. And even if you have some things, like we have a big church picnic each year. And one of the things at the church picnic is there's a section of children's games, and they play children's games for quite a while. And I usually take that time to go home and change because we have picnic, we have church outside in the park, and I'm going to still dress up somewhat for church, and then I'll go home, change into my picnic clothes, get my potluck item. That way I don't have to Elliot sitting out for another hour.
Thank you.
Right.
For another hour outside. And so I kind of use that time to do that while other people are doing those games. But I will say, even with that, they don't make anybody feel left out. They try to really get people to help out. And then there's always a large group of people, including people my age who might have kids, who aren't anywhere by the children's games because they're just letting their kids run over there and do their thing. And they're using that for adult talk time. So when I come back, I get my adult talk time with some of the people who are closer to my own age who I don't always get that with because there's kids. So having opportunities for those things all together where maybe some of the kids can do their own things still under supervision and they're still part of the whole can be really helpful too. I also think it's just helpful. I think it would be great if the church talked more about this in general, if it was just a thing. And the church is not a medical body and infertility is a medical thing. So I'm not trying to push the church into any of those kinds of things. But if people in the church, pastors and other church workers and just people were more willing to have some of those general conversations on Mother's Day. So something that my church does, and part of the reason we do this is because we struggle with infertility and my husband, as the pastor, does not want to do anything that's going to make anybody feel terrible on Mother's Day, including me, because he wants me in church.
He's a good husband.
Yeah. So do we pray for mothers? Absolutely. Do we also pray for people who wish they could be mothers and are not? Absolutely. Do we have a big whole middle of service crazy thing going on? We do not. And so churches that just think about that and think about all of the people in their church, whether it's women struggling with primary infertility, whether it's women struggling with secondary infertility, because that's a thing too. People who had, you know, wanted to have more children and can't. And some of those, even Mother's Day, even if they have children, can sometimes be challenging for them or other things. Caring for single women or single men as well. Yeah. Caring for single people, because sometimes I know they get left out as well of things. And just being more intentional as a church body about how we're talking and about what we're doing, I think could be really helpful. I don't have easy answers for what that all looks like. Yeah. I wish I did. Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of it's contextual too, just depending on your church and what you even do together. But
I was thinking as you were talking about how I wish we talked more about this and going back to our opening questions about the way people feel just such deep grief, but also shame at their inadequacy. But then throughout this entire conversation, I've been thinking about all the women in the Bible who struggled with this. You got Sarah, you got Rebecca, you got Rachel, you got Hannah, you got Elizabeth. I'm sure there are more, but it seems like every other woman in the Bible is struggling with this in a serious way and deeply grieving over it. And our lives are richer because we know their stories. And granted, in each of those cases, you know, God did open the possibility of at least one child, but it wasn't a given. Sarah was 90. That's quite
old.
And
I'll be honest, I don't want to have a kid when I'm 90 years old.
Right.
as much as I would love to be a mother, I really don't want God to give me that gift then.
Yeah. But the scripture is very open about these struggles with infertility. You know, talking about how Leah and Rachel have this great tension between them because one of them is a fertile mortal and the other one is not, and how this creates problems for their family. Like, scripture is not coy about this. So why do we feel like we can't talk about it? I guess that's my question. Back to the beginning. But why can't we? Maybe this time it's rhetorical. So thank you for sharing your story with us, because I think, you know, that by example, I've just seen in this podcast episode that you, by sharing your story, have given Sarah the opportunity to be more open on this subject than she has been in 6 years of podcasting.
It's true. I like rarely talk about it ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I think this is the first time.
It's hard.
Yeah. But also Carrie's my friend, so I'm comfortable talking about it with her because she knows.
Rachel, I think you're right. I think the Bible does give us these stories, and we know that wasn't, you know, just coincidental that they had that struggle and longed for the Lord to answer them. And we have that as encouragement. And so I think sharing our struggles and longing for the Lord to respond is a good thing, and we can do that for each other and lift each other up even while we wait. Wait for him too.
Oh, Manoah's wife too. I knew there was at least one more.
Oh, there you go. There's a lot of them.
And we always skip to the end where God answers their prayers, but there was a long lingering time in the middle for each of them. And the outcome was never sure. And I know that there were many more women whose names we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we get
prayers
Anna,
were not answered in the same way.
Yeah. We don't hear that she struggled with barrenness, but she struggled alone and waited for many, 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 many years before she saw Jesus.
Yeah,
that's true. And
she was alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a psalm about waiting for the Lord maybe out there?
Maybe one or two.
a lot.
Again, bringing it full circle back to the praying the Psalms.
Yes. That's a good way to start.
Psalms are just, go pray the Psalms, ladies. They're great in every situation.
I should do it more than I do. I pray them, but it's one of those things. Every time I start reading through the Psalms, I'm like, I should really go do this even more than I do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Every time.
Carrie, you're amazing. Just want to say that before we wrap.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, ladies, this has been a bit of an emotional hour, and however long this will be after I edit it, but we like having these conversations because it's something we should talk about more. So if you have stories you want to share with us, there is an anonymous way to comment on here too if you don't actually want to share your name. So you can do that as well if you want to share your stories in the Ladies Lounge on Facebook. You can always comment on Instagram as well.
But you don't have to be anonymous. It's okay.
It is okay.
We love you.
Either way is fine.
Either way is fine. You can share your stories with us, or I don't know, use this as a way to talk to your friends who you know might be struggling with this, or share it with people that you love. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give.